scores! Gilmore scores! With 1:03 left.
Off the glass, in left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla to the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by Al Aguilla. Rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg.
Okay, happy Tuesday, and welcome to the Deerfoot Inn and Casino. It's Steinberg along with you on a Tuesday, January 21st. We're coming at you from the 18th annual Calgary Flames Ambassadors Celebrity Poker Tournament. Lots to get to in the next hour, and we got 3 hours of Flames talk coming at you on this Tuesday because we're here at the poker tournament. Plenty of live guests to come on this Tuesday. Steinberg along with you on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. And let's kick off this hour by saying hello to our NHL insider, Frank Saravalli, brought to you by South Trail Chrysler, where they always make the buying process simple. Look for the big Canadian flag at 130th Ave or visit SouthTrailChrysler.com. And Frank joins us now from Daily Faceoff and DailyFaceoff.com, Amazon, and more. Frank, I know how you're doing, so I promise we won't keep you as long as normal. Thank you very much for being with us nonetheless. And I guess let's just jump right in. We're here at the Flames Ambassadors Poker Tournament. There's nobody Flames-wise in the room right now, so we can talk freely for a little bit. But they're just coming off a win over Winnipeg on Saturday. They don't play again until Thursday when they take on the Buffalo Sabres. They are holding down a playoff spot, and now there's been plenty of buzz over the last few days about, hey, what kind of roster moves might this group make between now and the trade deadline, which is less than 2 months away. We've been talking for months now about potentially them going out and finding a right shot young center, but is there anything else outside of that we could see the Flames going after between now and the trade deadline?
I think you could see them nibble around the edges for a third pair defenseman. I mean, look, I don't want to be too critical, but I think if you were to line up all 32 third pairs in a row, the Flames are definitely in the bottom quartile, and they could certainly use to get better in that area. That said, probably don't want to pay an arm and a leg to do it, but I think that's where you start to get into some of these really intriguing spots that the Flames have played themselves into, which is they deserve to have a little help. They deserve a little push. You know, listen to the players, listen to Nazem Kadri again, talking about how they believe and how, you know, they're going to continue to try and defy the naysayers. That has been part of the power of that team all season long. And I think, you know, given an opportunity that, you know, you're not going to have to dispel massive future assets, like if we're talking mid to late picks, then all of a sudden I think that changes the perspective a little bit, and you can slightly improve this team on the margins without really damaging anything for the future.
And as we've talked about, the ability to go find that center may or may not be there between now and the trade deadline. And the thing is, I also wonder a little bit about this team and upsetting the apple cart. Like, there were a lot of people in this market wondering if they were going to go pluck a guy like Derek Ryan off of waivers when he was on there earlier this week. But, you know, one of the things that this group, I think, is really happy about is the way they've got the way they've got this team rolling, and the chemistry and the feel inside that locker room. I don't know if there is a huge desire to mess that up unless it's clearly going to be an upgrade right now.
Well, and that's why you see things like Rory Karen's eventually or possibly getting a shot to play center. Like, let's mix it up. Let's see what the possibilities are. Let's give someone a few game tryout. Let's try and make the most of what we've got here. And if the Flames are missing the playoffs this year, well, I think, you know, I was talking about this at the beginning of the year with you. And I hate the cliche because unfortunately I use it a lot coaching minor hockey, but you're either winning or you're learning. And in this case, I think the Flames have learned a lot about the group that they have. I think they've learned about some of the character. I think they've learned good and bad about who can do what and who can't. And it seems like they're getting closer to a real clear priority list and order and how to tackle this and what that looks like. But then at the same time, you learn a little bit more. And you see Dustin Wolf and the game that he's had the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 weeks now. And you start to think, well, is he pushing this team even further away from the bottom? And maybe not just into a playoff spot, but does his play potentially change the timeline of the build that this team has had? I'm not saying that's likely or that's what's going to happen, but I think you have to at least allow for the possibility that, hey, this guy is so good that he's changing the dynamics of our plan.
Geez, it's going to be, if he ends up starting on Thursday against Buffalo, which we all believe he will, that'll end up being 12 starts in 16. It'll be 7 of 8. Like, he's taken over the crease, and he's, boy, is he elevating this group a little bit more than I think anybody would have thought. We've talked about him in the Calder, all of that type of stuff, and it was last week that you said, hey, if this continues, him getting Vezina votes isn't out of the question. Boy, like that it's hard to argue that with the way he's playing right now.
Yeah, and look, I think he's just posed a real series of questions that I don't know if they were necessarily prepared for. I mean, they went into this season thinking, let's have Dustin Wolf dip his toe into the water. And you saw who he played against, how frequently he played. And the most impressive part of it is that he's completely taken the net by force to the point where it would be a disservice to the rest of the room, because this is the NHL and a meritocracy, that he should continue to earn starts and earn play against better teams, against tougher spots, more starts in a row. And then when you see that, he's not just rocketing up the Calder standings, but he's also rocketing up, hey, what does this guy, does he deserve Vezina looks?
Yep. Okay, that's the Flames side of things. We're chatting with Frank Saravalli. He joins us every Tuesday here on Flames Talk. The team that is chasing them right now is the Vancouver Canucks. And boy, over the weekend, it sure did feel like a JT Miller trade somewhere was imminent. Now here we are on Tuesday. Frank, what can you tell us about how close potentially a trade for Miller was on Saturday night?
It's really hard to pinpoint, Pat. Look, I think everyone can agree and nod their heads that the Canucks and Rangers were deep in conversation. I've received pushback from the Rangers on just how close it was. And in fact, you know, the fact that JT Miller ended up playing and being in the starting lineup, I don't know if that gave you some indication as to what kind of statement the Vancouver Canucks wanted to send. But look, there was no shortage of reporting, and I don't want to say that I can't definitively say that nothing is imminent. I don't believe anything is imminent at the moment, and I think things have really cooled off with the Rangers to the point where I think they've probably taken a back seat. My understanding on the situation is, and there's been lots of rumor, speculation, and innuendo about this, My understanding is that the Rangers – in the end, we're not willing to take on the entirety of JT Miller's contract. And the conversation, I think, ultimately became to Vancouver, well, how much are you willing to retain? And the whole point of this exercise for Vancouver is to move off of JT Miller's deal in its entirety. No one wants to retain, even if it's a small number, for a significant period of time, like what's remaining on Miller's deal. And beyond that, it hampers their ability in the here and now to take whatever they get packaged their way and then put it together to go improve their roster now. So the way I kind of looked at that deal that was beginning to unfold was the Rangers send a lesser package because of all the responsibility that comes with taking on Miller. And then the Canucks take whatever they can get plus the full complement of cap space that was just created by Miller's exit, and then go out and try and improve the Vancouver Canucks. So that's how I saw it. That's what sources indicated to me was going on. And now we start to look at and piece together who's still in the mix.
So what is the most likely outcome now when it comes to JT?
I still think, excuse me, they're working to move him. I think other teams that have been in touch, including Carolina, New Jersey, I think to a lesser extent, the Dallas Stars using their cap space. They have, I don't want to say pulled back, but they're realizing that the Canucks aren't in a great spot here. And the offers weren't really great to begin with. And I think now they're kind of fishing to see how low could we get the Vancouver Canucks to go? Can we get them to basically just have a fire sale here and say, take this two-time 40-goal scorer and 100-point player off of our hands because we have to?
So does this mean that the whole idea of them moving off of Elias Pettersson, that's kind of been shot down for the time being?
I wouldn't say the door is totally closed on that, because ultimately they might have to turn around and make a more difficult move than they wanted to. I still think this is hard enough. But the fact that Pettersson has apparently expressed an interest in staying in Vancouver, that he's younger, that there's been, I guess you could say, less run-ins with him, even though he's sort of definitely far from a perfect player and teammate, that they feel like the situation might be a little bit more manageable with him as opposed to JT Miller. And I think the thing that I keep coming back to is, no matter what, making the decision to trade one of these players right now immediately makes the Vancouver Canucks a worse team, and I don't care what they get in return.
Yeah. Frank Saravalli's with us. A couple more with our NHL insider from Daily Faceoff and dailyfaceoff.com. And I guess the last place we'd go here, Frank, is the whole idea of the – well, it's not even the whole idea. People in Edmonton are very incredulous about the gall for the NHL to suspend Connor McDavid for 3 games for that cross-check to Connor Garland's face. I know that you are very in tune and in touch with that market in Edmonton. Can you kind of explain to us down here in Calgary why so much frustration that McDavid got a 3-game suspension? What's the discourse like, and why is the discourse what it is?
Well, I think there's been an improper commingling of the two outstanding factors here, which is, on the one hand, you've got the officiating scenario, which I don't think anyone's really particularly happy with. And I'm not going to say just the Oilers, because last week it was the Minnesota Wild who were unhappy that there wasn't a penalty against Connor McDavid for elbowing Marcus Johansson in the head. And every night, these teams and players and coaches find a spot where they were deeply unhappy with the status of the officiating. That's separate and aside from what happened with Connor McDavid and cross-checking someone in the teeth. You know, you make the decision to do that, and I don't care if you're 97, 99, or whatever your number is, you can't do it. And he needed to pay the price. Now, that said, I think 3 games was a little rich. I think if you look at the Austin Matthews suspension from the outdoor game when he cross-checked Rasmus Dahlin in the face, that was 2 games, and I see no different. But I believe the Department of Player Safety made the case that because McDavid has a previous disciplinary history, that suddenly ratcheted up from 2 to 3 games. Okay, fine. So park that over there. Mm-hmm. Now, back to the other side with the officiating, which I believe has a serious lack of accountability around the sport in general. And I think something needs to change. The fact that Connor McDavid was in a wrestling match, full-on grappling, just north of the slot with 10 seconds left in a one-goal game, that needs to be called. Like, that cannot happen. And the abuse that Connor McDavid takes on a night-to-night basis, I think there's 3 to 4 penalties additionally that could be called per game. I believe that to be closer to fact than opinion. Now, that said, why is it that the officials don't feel a need to provide context or education or to explain themselves?
Right.
Because every day we wake up and it's like we have our heads stuck in the sand. All we hear from the NHL is, hey, our officials are the best in the world. It's almost like if they continue to tell us that at some point we'll believe it. And I'm not saying that they don't have a difficult job or that they're terrible, but they could use, for the rest of the good of the game, for players, coaches, fans, gamblers, media, whatever it might be, they could use to provide some context to what they're seeing and feeling and help us understand the process. Because this whole idea of nothing to see here, move along. It's 2025. It's a joke.
Yeah, and I get that. I do. Just it feels like what I've had I've seen it many times. Like I've seen many calls. You're like, yeah, I mean, McDavid probably doesn't get as many calls as he possibly could. I just don't understand the whole idea of protecting yourself. I don't know if that cross check to Connor Garland's face falls under the guise of protecting yourself. That's the only thing that I've had trouble figuring out.
Well, I'm with you. Like it, they're two totally separate things.
Yeah.
But my point is, had there been a call made, Connor McDavid doesn't get to the point of cross-checking someone in the face because Connor Garland's in the box after thinking he could just lay on him like a blanket and just take out the best player in the world with 10 seconds left to help the Canucks skate off with a win.
Right.
That can't happen. And this whole idea of, hey, well, everyone on the ice, you get minor penalties too at the end of regulation of a game that's already over. Like, congratulations for your showman effort as officials, because you dropped the ball and you lost control of play.
Yeah. The Myers one seemed to be pretty elementary. If you're going to give McDavid 3, probably got to give Myers 3 as well, because his was right there to the face of Evan Bouchard as well.
That's how I saw it. And, like, I want to be totally clear. I am not under any circumstances excusing the cross-check from Connor McDavid. Should absolutely be suspended and should be a multi-game suspension. But it's a totally separate issue than the poor lack of accountability from NHL officials on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah. Get out of here, Frank. Rest up. We'll talk next week. Thanks for getting it through today, my friend.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, just this flu bug has been brutal. The aches and chills. I've been laying in bed all day.
Yeah, get back to resting. We'll do it next week when you're at full strength.
See you, Pat.
See you, buddy. Frank Saravalli is our NHL insider from Daily Faceoff, dailyfaceoff.com, and he joins us every Tuesday here on Flames Talk, brought to you by South Trail Chrysler, where they always make the buying process simple. Look for the big Canadian flag at 130th Ave, or visit southtrailchrysler.com.
Flames Talk is live on Calgary's hockey station, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Time now for the Daily Flames Roundtable on this Tuesday from the Deerfoot Inn and Casino for the Calgary Flames Ambassadors Celebrity Poker Tournament, 18th annual. Wes Gilbertson, Pat Steinberg, and now Derek Wills joins the program as well. And the Daily Flames Roundtable is brought to you, as always, by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, just minutes from the airport. Gentlemen, let's start with the news of the day from around this team. We found out at noon earlier on this Tuesday that Walker Dewar is on waivers. Gents, just our reaction to that on this Tuesday.
To be honest, I wasn't surprised to see the news. I actually wondered if it might happen before that four-game road trip, but it didn't. And then he's a healthy scratch in the final game of that trip, and the Flames win. So I wasn't surprised to see that happen prior to their next game coming up against the Sabres on Thursday night. I actually really liked how Walker Dewar played when he first got recalled. Thought he really played well in a bottom six role and used his feet, used his size, and kind of banged and crashed on the forecheck, and then kind of stopped doing those things. And offensively, I mean, quite frankly, the numbers just haven't been there, at least not at the NHL level. You know, was having a really good season in the AHL with 11 goals and 19 points in 20 games, but goalless with one assist in 16 games with the Flames this season. So with the number of players who have had fantastic seasons for the Wranglers, not surprised to see then put him on waivers, potentially send him down and swap him out for somebody else.
Yeah, I wasn't too surprised by this one either, guys. I think we've seen Walker Dewar's game. I guess we can all debate whether the word for it is plateau or whether it's dipped a little bit of late, but that combined with the Flames not necessarily getting the impact that they've wanted from their fourth line, I thought we were going to see a domino fall sooner than later, and I'm not surprised it's Walker Dewar. I wonder about whether the combination of size and speed that he can bring makes him attractive to a team on waivers. Although, you know, he did clear once at the start of October to head down to the minors in the first place, and so just an opportunity. This is a sign of the sort of push you have from within. This is the sort of problem you want to have. You've got Dryden Hunt now tied for the AHL scoring lead. You've got other guys down there, Adam Klapka, William Stromgren pushing for his first NHL opportunity. You've got some options, and so when a guy's play levels off or dips at the NHL level and he's not going to be in the lineup, he's not giving you what you expect out of him, this is what happens. And I really do think the fact that the Flames have that push from their farm club, that we've seen guys like Jacob Pelche and Rory Karens come up and make the impact they've had, it's a really good thing for the organization. And I'm curious to see who's next.
Yeah, I look, I think as you guys both said, I think he came up and initially gave the team what they were looking for, and he added that speed. He was killing penalties. He was throwing body checks, and he was doing exactly what you'd hope of him in that fourth line role. And then it has kind of dropped off over the last little bit, and it's kind of regressed to where it was last season, regressed to where you're like, okay, we know what you're capable of. Now we just need to see it on a more regular basis. And so we haven't seen that as much over the last number of weeks. And that's not to say that he couldn't get the recall down the road. I know that him possessing that right shot is something that helps him and is something they don't have a lot of at the NHL level. And I think this is a really good spot, though, to bring a guy like Dryden Hunt into the lineup, because if that is the way they go, I think he'd be a really nice addition, because he can play both wings and Lomberg can play both wings. So you got a little flexibility there. He can play with a little bit more pace, or at the very least can play with the same pace Dewar can when Dewar's going. I think with what we've seen of that fourth line for the last little bit, Willsey, there have been times this year where Calgary's fourth line was something that was a real positive for them, and it was something that was helping them create matchup issues against other teams because it was playing so well. It hasn't been that as much of late, which we'll get to with our second question as well, but I think part of that is because, you know, Dewar's game hasn't been exactly where it needs to be. So, yeah, this one makes sense that maybe they'd go down this road and make this call. And probably is a good opportunity. It's probably time to see somebody else from the American League team, because that team has played so well this year.
Yeah, and as you guys have both touched on, the good news is there have been a lot of seasons, certainly during my 11 calling games for the team, where they didn't have a lot of good options at the AHL level. You know, they might have one or two guys, and that was it. And then the cupboards were pretty bare. But, I mean, Brad Pascal's done a great job as general manager of that team, and certainly the cupboards are full there as far as NHL-ready prospects are concerned. And if one guy doesn't play the way they need him to play, then there are other guys trying to knock down the door to get a recall. So, yeah, I do think it was time. And for me, and Pat, you and I talked about this offline, I think Dryden Hunt is the guy, and that might not be the most popular opinion, at least for some Flames fans who maybe want to see a younger player, but Dryden Hunt's having a phenomenal season at the AHL level, and you also know who he is at the NHL level. And I think the fourth line in some ways has kind of lost its identity a little bit. This is a Flames team that needs everybody contributing. And if you're not contributing by being a goal scorer or a point producer or an elite defender, you've got to be something. You've got to do something to help the team win. And I really think that when that fourth line is right, regardless of who's been on it, Ryan Lomberg for almost every game, and then you've had a bunch of guys playing with him, that can be a really effective energy line. You know, a line that gets in there and is tough to play against and uses the forecheck to either create something offensively for themselves or for the next line that comes onto the ice. And I think with Dryden Hunt, that's the type of game that he can play and has played for the Flames at the NHL level. And I think there's maybe a bit higher ceiling for him offensively than for Walker Dewar. So if I was the GM, he's the guy who I'd call up, assuming they do bring somebody up. But hey, they've got plenty of good choices.
if it is Dryden Hunt, and I think we're all in agreement that he's probably the top candidate, let me run something by you guys. What about asking Ryan Lomberg to maybe play a little bit extra? It's been a good spark plug on home ice especially. What if you put him with Yegor Sharangovich and Andre Kuzmenko? And what if you just dreamed up the line of Dryden Hunt, Rory Karens, and Jacob Pelche?
Interesting.
I don't love it, but I guess I need to see it to really know.
I mean, it was the best line in the American Hockey League at the start of this season. So you know that there's some chemistry there. I think we're probably in agreement that the coach is ready to give Kevin Rooney a night off and try Rory Karens at center. I think, in fact, we're going to talk about that next.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I wonder, with the familiarity there, with the way Jacob Pelche clicked with Rory Karens, with the effort Saturday in Winnipeg to get Jacob Pelche some more minutes, just wonder if there might be a fit there.
It's interesting because the one thing, if they do, and maybe it's a good transition into that next topic, it's Wilsey with Wes and Pat on the Daily Flames Roundtable, because Wilsey, the thing that we saw, people were losing it at on social media when I had the gall to, and I made very sure to say, Jonathan Huberdeau, maintenance day, not skating. So Kevin Rooney was taking his spot on the Kadri line. It was Rooney on the left with Kadri and Pospisil. And people are like, they always got to put Rooney. I'm like, guys, do you know what this actually is meaning? Like, they've got Karens in the middle on the fourth line and Rooney placeholding. Like, do you know what this actually is indicating here? It indicates that he's probably coming out of the lineup and Karens is likely going to get a run down the middle. Then I asked Ryan Huska about that after practice today, Wilsey, and he said, hey, it's something that we're looking at, and on home ice is a situation where we've got a better opportunity to use a young player like Karens down the middle. So that would be interesting to me if they thought about going Pelche, Karens, Hunt, only because they have played together, and maybe it gives you a little bit more balance on your fourth line, and maybe there's a little bit less separation between the third and fourth line. It's something to think about, but even as you move Karens to the middle, which it looks like they're going to try for Thursday night, different feel in terms of the way they might use that line, hey?
Well, first of all, do you guys remember way back when people used to read books and newspapers and those sorts of things?
Whoa, go easy on newspapers.
Yeah, this is all tongue-in-cheek, Wes. Pat, I think it's all on you, because you should know better than to expect everybody. I'm not singling anybody out in particular here, but to have the type of attention span to read your entire tweet to know that Kevin Rooney wasn't replacing Jonathan Huberdeau on the left side of the Flames first line. But we're living in the age of TikTok, so here we are. First, can I just address what Wes said? Yegor Sharangovich is starting to go, and I need him to go in the second half of the season. I need him to keep scoring. So I just would be afraid to break up the line that he's on, although based on what I saw from practice today, they have done that already. So we'll have to wait and see what they do in Thursday's game against the Sabres. But, you know, they need that third scoring line, and it looks like they might finally have it going. So I'd be leery to break those guys up. But, I'm not really sure what to do with the combinations. I mean, they've got some that are working right now and some that aren't. But as I said earlier, this is a Flames team that kind of needs everybody pulling in the same direction. They need four lines. They need three pairings. They need a good goaltender. So I'm not sure I've got a strong opinion on this one.
Yeah, I'm curious about it. I'm curious, too, to see Rory Karens up the middle. And you know, I had a chat with Rory Karens at the start of the poker tournament and was just asking him, hey, what have you, 4 points in four NHL games so far, what have you found to be the biggest challenge? And he said, you know, quite honestly, I think the biggest challenge has been the stuff as a winger along the wall. It's been something I haven't done this season. It's been, you know, a little bit of a challenge to not get back into that, but win some of those board battles in the NHL. And that's certainly not Rory Karens suggesting that he thinks life as an NHL center is going to be easy. You know, he'll go out of his way to tell you that he thinks he has a lot to learn in this league, that he thinks he has a long way to go. But
yeah.
I do I do think Thursday against the Buffalo Sabres is a good landing spot to audition Rory Cairns as a center. I'm interested to see how it goes, how it might look in terms of spreading more offense, giving you maybe a little bit less of a traditional fourth line. You can always go back to what you have, but one thing that I really give Ryan Huska a lot of credit for is I feel like he has a way of, you know, making sure guys are at the right confidence level before asking them to do something that maybe they're not accustomed to, that's maybe another step up for them. And I think that's exactly what we're seeing with Rory Cairns, a kid who certainly didn't expect to have 4 points in four NHL games, now potentially auditioning at center. I think it's a really good time for it.
It's interesting. Like, I do think, Wilsey, that game on Thursday against the Sabres team that's at the very bottom of the Eastern Conference standings, on home ice, where you've got a little bit more say in terms of who you put certain lines out against, potentially with, you know, assuming that Dewar goes to the American League and they bring up a guy like Hunt who has familiarity with them. I think it's a good time to see what you've got in a young guy down the middle who's been playing center all year. And you know that you've got a good look with him going back on the wing. You know that you can put him back there. I think it's interesting because they are very thin down the middle. And, you know, we're here at the poker tournament, Wilsey, and Connor Zary's walking around not with a big-time noticeable limp. So, like, that's good news, but we're not expecting him back right away. So they are thin at center, which is a big reason why Kevin Rooney has remained in the lineup as long as he has. I think when you're as thin organizationally down the middle and as thin at the NHL level right now at that position, giving a guy like Cairns a look, even if it's for a game or two, just to see what he can do at NHL pace playing center, I do think there's some merit to it. So he's got a little bit more comfortable. He's played 4 games on the road. If they were to do that, and it's not like the last 3 games on the road have been sparkling. Like, they were, in terms of 5-on-5 play, like, they were hemmed in. They were on their heels. They were kind of the team being dictated to for 3 straight games, against 2 against St. Louis and 1 against Winnipeg. Now maybe now's the time to tweak things a little bit in that regard too, especially when you got that home ice game against the Sabres. I do think it's a worthy thing to give a try for, especially if, because if it were just to put, if you were just to put Cairns between Dewar and Lomberg the way that it had been, I'd maybe have been a little bit more against it. But if you're going to roll your fourth line out a little bit more and it's not quite the same role that Rooney had been playing, that's what kept Rooney in, because he kind of was the only guys we talked about that profiled as that number four center. But if you're going to use your fourth line a little bit differently and a little bit closer to like a second, third line and give it a try like that, then I think that I'd be all for watching it, seeing how it looks for a game or two.
Well, I guess the good news is, even if you do try these new combinations in your bottom six, you can always revert back to the old ones if you don't feel like they're working. But the one thing I would guard against is taking the Sabres too lightly. Now, they're a team that has a tough time finding ways to win games, but they're not a team that lacks talent. And when I look at this next 4-game stretch, it's definitely on paper the easiest of the 4 games. You're at home versus Buffalo, on the road versus Minnesota and Winnipeg, and then back at home against the league-leading Capitals. So I look at this Sabres game as one you absolutely have to win, because the next 3 are going to be very tough to win because of who you're playing. So, you know, I've got to put my best lineup out there on Thursday night and try to pick up 2 points on home ice versus the Sabres before I hit the road to play the Wild and the Jets in a back-to-back on the weekend. So, sure, experiment, but I think I'd probably have a pretty quick trigger finger if I'm Ryan Huska. If I don't like what I'm seeing early in that game on Thursday night, I'm probably going back to some combinations that I know and know work.
Wilsey, maybe the ingredients you just pointed out, because you're absolutely right. It's an important game. For that reason, it's important not to send a message to your team that you can take another group lightly, but maybe that makes Ryan Huska's lineup decisions for Thursday that much more telling. Maybe that makes them that much more intriguing, because he's going to be thinking very much along those lines.
Yeah, and sometimes when you try some new combinations, you inject some energy into your team as well. And another thing I wonder about, and it's something else Pat and I were talking about over text, is the fourth line hasn't been as effective as it was earlier in the season. What if you tried a different looking type of fourth line? You know, a line that can play with energy, but maybe a line that could produce a little bit more offensively. What if you had Rory Karens and Jacob Peltier, who were so good together in the AHL and seemed to have a little something together in the NHL, certainly in their first game, on the fourth line? And you put a fourth line together that you thought could maybe score a little bit more for you. Just a little different way of thinking about things, but they need all four lines rolling. So I understand why they're, you know, playing with some different things and trying some new things here.
Yeah, and I think, you know, to circle back, guys, to where we started, like the putting Walker Duehr on waivers, talking about who you might bring up instead, what this team has maybe been missing with Andre Kuzmenko not going has been like, it hasn't felt like your extra forward has been a guy you were going to put in. Like, you want that extra forward to be creating competition. I think if Andre Kuzmenko is feeling good coming off, finally snapping out of that scoring drought, like, you want 13 forwards that are really in the conversation to be in the lineup, and hopefully that's the first step to get in there.
Yep. Thank you, Wilsey. Good stuff as always. We'll do it again on Wednesday, hey?
Okay, guys. Enjoy the poker tournament.
We shall. He is Derek Wills. He's Wes Gilbertson. My name is Pat Steinberg, and that'll wrap us up on our Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you, as always, on this Wednesday by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport.